Today in Parsha Fundamentals, I would like to embark on something very difficult, very big challenge, but very fundamental, and that is to discuss the Cheira Egel. The Cheira Egel is one of the most misunderstood chataim in Jewish history. First of all, it was the biggest chait in Jewish history. We're still suffering to this day from a payoff from the onesh of the Cheira Egel. But we tend to, I guess, childishly trivialize what Klal Yisrael were doing at this time. This was the Dor Deah. These were people who were not simple at all. All their cheshbonos were of the highest level of understanding the Hanhagas of Hashem Yisbarach in the Bria. And to say that after the Eser Makos and after Kriyas Yamsuf, where they were Zocha to Nevuah and Dargas that we can't even be Taifes, after experiencing Maimon Har Sinai, that they would worship a golden calf is untenable. It's ridiculous. But nevertheless, the standard understanding is that they did Avodah Zarah, and you can't blame people because that seems to be the Pashup Shad and Sukkim. And if that's not the case, then what was so bad about what they did? If it wasn't Avodah Zarah, so what exactly was this terrible Avera of the Cheira Egel? I mean, it really does sound like Avodah Zarah. If you look in the Psukim, it says, Vayar ha'am ki boishesh Moshe laredes min ahar. Moshe delayed. Vayikala ha'am ha'arim vayomer lav kuma seilanu Elohim. Let's make a God. That's what it sounds like. The word Elohim, and don't be nervous that I'm saying the word Elohim so freely, because I'm not meaning Hashem's name now. It's Avodah Zarah. Right, let's make a God for ourselves. Asher yelchu lefaneinu kizem Moshe ish asher lanu meretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu mehayalo. So let's try to just, I don't know how much time we have. We could do this for 3 hours, but we're not going to do that. We're going to do it for a few minutes. But I want to, maybe I'll just point out some difficulties in the psukim. Okay, now they want a God. So if they want a God, why do they want a God? Because what happened? Moshe delayed, okay? Last time I checked, if there's a delay in your leader, you don't need a new God. So if they said that Hashem's gone, right? You know, like, we're done. Like, Hashem was supposed to give us the Torah, Moshe didn't come back, and Hashem's not around, then I understand. Then that's a reason to make a new God, so to speak. But it doesn't say that. It says that Moshe delayed, and what do we need? We need someone to direct us. Someone's got to direct us. Now, that sounds very technical for serving a new deity, right? Just in Pashup Shad and Sukkim. It's like, oh, we need a GPS in the Midbar, so therefore, we need a new God. Like, something's very off over here, okay? And also, the word Elohim. The word Elohim is one of the fascinating words of names of Hashem. Why? The word Elohim can be used in how many contexts? What does the word Elohim mean? Power. Where we find in the Torah, actually not too long ago, that the word Elohim is used to describe people. Okay, B'nai Elohim could be one of them, but in Parshas Mishpatim, Bezdin. Why are Bezdin called Elohim? It's a good question, right? The answer is that the word Elohim means a Bal Kochos, someone who calls the shots. Hashem, hu ha Elohim. Hashem is the all-powerful. Bezdin calls the shots. Okay? There's deeper reasons than that. They actually have the hashra of Midas Elohim, of Hashem, on them. However, the simple meaning, which always the simple and the previous reason are the same, if you really understand both, you'll understand there's never a stira. But that's from the base medrash of the Vilna Gaon. There's never a stira between Nigla and Nister, they're always in the same Havana, just a different level. An Elohim is someone who makes decisions. A Dayan, there's nobody more powerful than the Dayan. He decides your fate. So therefore he's called an Elohim. Why are they asking for an Elohim over here? So it seems like you could interpret this, and I'm just going to get you to think now, because then we'll maybe see as many Mefarshim as we can in the time allotted. But Moshe Rabbeinu was also, in that sense, he was a guide. He was a form of an Elohim. He was someone who was taking them through the Midbar. They were without leadership. And we know in Jewish history, by the way, the most dangerous thing is being without a leader. Just if you look at what happened I don't want to mention names today. I'm not in that mood. But there's been terrible fallout from movements that were so leader-based. When a movement is very leader-based, there are a few movements like this. They're so leader-based that they can't live without their leader, and they end up figuring out how their leader is still there or coming up with some strange substitute for that leader. But by the way, it comes from a big mila. This only happens to groups that have awe-inspiring leaders. It's a pella to me that Satmar had Reb Yoelish. Reb Yoelish was an awe-inspiring leader, and still he's their guiding light, the Satmar Rebbe. However, they're very Torah-based Hasidus. Satmar was always a learning Hasidus, and they did not ever put the Rebbe in this this heavenly, unreachable place. They were always like in the sugyas. So learning Hasidus are often very, very grounded. Okay, we're not going to get into things that are less grounded, but we learned. And also another lesson in history, by the way, and I always have this in mind. Like, I was picturing myself, Chaim, you like this. I was picturing myself if I was living at the year 6000 when Mashiach's supposed to come. Let's say I was living there. My great-grandchildren, you know, they'll end up, hopefully Mashiach will come way before that. But what about at the buzzer of history? The world history is supposed to end after 6,000 years. So like, what are we going to do? I was like picturing this, you know, my Einiklach, if Mashiach doesn't come. So now, like, you know, similar to other times, like there's going to be a serious expectation on that Rosh Hashanah, right? History is over. We have a Masorah that the world can't be more than 6,000 years old. So what I took for myself, I don't know, maybe I should write this after 120 in my will to my children, to pass to their grandchildren. Every time in history where we have thought that something was supposed to come at a certain time and we got impatient, we thought we counted right, we messed up, and we did something stupid. It also happened in the Megillah story. Does anybody know where in the Megillah story we saw a wrong count? Sure. Beautiful. Achashverosh miscounted the 70 years of Galus. So all I know is I'm ready for this one. I don't want it to happen again. If, you know, if Mashiach's not going to come in year 6000, and my kids are going to, I mean, my 8 o'clock, they're going to have to read the Tzava, say, relax, just be patient. Do not build a golden calf. This has happened before in history. But delays are very, very scary for us. Flights are being delayed left and right. So this is like in Yanni Dioma, right? My Sefer is being delayed. It actually causes a certain panic. A delay causes a certain panic, a certain sense of doubt, a certain sense of, and frenzy. And when you're in that frenzy, you can make a lot of interesting mistakes. Unfortunately, we're just going to be getting our feet wet today, but these are already two big life yesodas we pulled out of these psukim. One is, the role of a leader is to guide you, but you cannot idolize a leader to the extent where you can't live without that leader. And it could even be someone's father. Somebody could really, there are certain levels of avelus where people, or any type of Rebbe. You know, I remember when I lost my Rebbe, Reb Moshe Shapiro. I don't want to get too heavy today, but I never felt such a deep emotion of pain. From a place that I never even knew that I had. It seemed like from a deep, deep place. Very, very deep place. But Baruch Hashem, I'm a Talmud of his Talmud Mofak, Rav Zvulun Schwartzman, and I even understand his Talmud more than I understood my Rebbe, Rav Moshe, and he's much more approachable, and I learned with him B'chavrusa. I was supposed to learn with Rav Moshe Shapiro privately right before he was Nifter. So you can imagine the Tsar that I had, you know, before that. But I don't think I would have, I think in retrospect, I see why Hashem didn't do that. I see that we were too far from each other. There was, I have my Rebbe Rezulon Schwartzman, who Hashem understood was my Shoresh Neshama, could be Mekabel such a light from close. And I don't think I could have been Mekabel Rav Moshe's or his light from too close. I maybe it would have blinded me. But there can be a devastating loss, but then the Torah continues, right? In Parshas Tetzava, my friends, I'm reminded of the Halig Yigra. You're going to love this, Shragi. Listen to this, right? In Parshas Tetzava, there's no mention of Moshe's name. How many psukim are in Parshas Tetzava? I think, let's see, it says at the end, it's the 101, okay? If you take Moshe Rabbeinu's name, Moshe, right? And you do what's called Gematria Nister. Gematria Nister is a very interesting type of Gematria where you take the hidden letters of the letters. What do I mean? In a mem, if you spell the word mem, the letter mem, it's spelled mem, right? Mem. If you spell the letter shin, it's shin, yud, nun, right? And if you spell the letter hey, hey actually has a few spellings. In Chachmea Emes, hey Aleph, hey yud, but the standard spelling is hey Aleph. That's the standard spelling for hey. So now let's do the math, okay? Take the Moshe, which is the Niglev Moshe. Mem, Shin, Hey, and ignore that. Now let's look for the hidden letters. So what's the hidden letter in the Mem?
Mem.
A Mem, okay? What's the hidden letter in the letters in the Shin? Yud, Nun. So we're up to now 100, right? If we count the Mem, the hidden Mem, the Yud and the Nun, now we're at 100. And what's the hidden letter in the Hey?
Aleph.
The same amount of psukim in Parshas Tetzava where Moshe's not mentioned. Says the Vilna Gaon, and I'm so excited I remembered this. I didn't think I was going to speak about this. I don't remember what. It's been a long time since I've ever talked about this pshat. That Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in Parshas Tetzava because what usually falls out on Parshas Tetzava? Zayin Adar. Moshe's Nifter. And the message is Moshe in Nigla is not here. The Mem Shin in Hey. But hiding, you can't see his name in Parshas Tetzaveh, but you see 101, you see the hidden Moshe. Moshe's Torah moves on. So that concept that the Vilna Gaon brings about Zayin Adar is exactly the conflict of losing a leader. When you lose a leader, you become so scared. And Klal Yisrael thought they lost Moshe. Why did they think they lost Moshe? The Satan showed them an image of Moshe Rabbeinu being gone. And these are real life lessons. You know what I'll try to do now? Yeah, let's keep going. So these are some of the complications over here, the complicated things. The other major problem over here, I'm going to give questions more than answers today. What's pshat with Aaron over here? Okay, Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and Aaron made it through all this like squeaky clean, basically. Aaron still was the Kohen Gadol. Aaron was Zocha, right? He's busy collecting jewelry, and he's saying tomorrow we're going to make a big party, which seems to be a big problem over here. However, what did they want to do? They wanted to make an Elohim, right? What does the psukim say about Aaron? Oh, then something else. Well, Aaron says Vayomer Chag LaHashem Machar. He uses the Yud Kei Vav Kei. They said we want an Elohim. He says tomorrow we're going to have a Chag, a party for Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Aaron is clearly not speaking the same language as these people. They're saying they want an Elohim, which we're not even sure what that is. Aaron's saying we're going to take all of this gold and we're going to make a Chag LaHashem. And then what gets really strange over here, and this is where it gets very problematic. Vayikach miyadav v'yatzer b'cheret v'yaseu egel ma'aseka. They made a golden calf. Vayomru. What did they say? Eila Elohecha Yisrael Asher Alucha Meretz Mitzrayim. something's very off over here. If this is regular Avodah Zarah, so it's one thing to like reject Hashem Avrami, but it's another thing to take a golden calf and say, not only are you God, but you're the God who took us out of Mitzrayim. I mean, come on. Come on. You want to pick a new God, Beseder. But don't say that this is the God. You just made this God. 5 minutes ago, you made this God. You're saying that it's Elohecha Yisrael. What is going on over here? Okay? So I think we will have time to delve in. I don't like to leave you hanging too much. Let's try to delve in a little bit over here into the different shitas. Let's start with the Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra shita is the following, and everyone agrees that the danger over here was losing leadership, right? So now what? Now what do you do? So we need something tangible over here, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was tangible. Moshe Rabbeinu was someone you could talk to, communicate to. So they wanted something, says the Eben Ezra, that would sort of like bring down Hashem's presence and communicate with them in the Midbar things that they needed to know. No person was able to do it anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu is gone. So they were going to make something that was kind of like similar to what the stargazers do and make it represent Hashem himself. And that's the diuk. It says Elohim. They didn't want a God. They wanted a leader. They wanted Hashem to communicate to them where to go. And that's why Aaron says it's a Chag LaHashem. Tomorrow it's a party for Hashem. And that's why they called him Avrami, this calf, the one who took us out from Mitzrayim. They didn't want a new God. They wanted like a transistor radio, you know, of Shemayim to like tell them exactly what's happening, because they had Moshe before who was communicating all that. Now they had this ego. The Ramban disagrees slightly. It's not slightly. I think these are shilas of one. The Ramban might hold the Eben Ezra's sheet as like apikorsis, but he has a slight nuance over here. He says you can't put Hashem's presence, the divine presence itself, into a calf. That's a problematic thing to use, like stargazing and all this stuff. He says no. What they wanted to do was something similar. We know that on the Kisei HaKavod there is a shor, there is an ox on the heavenly throne. And Moshe Rabbeinu, that it's on the left of the Kisei HaKavod, which is Midas HaDin. Moshe Rabbeinu's din, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is Yikov HaDin HaSahar. He's the one who makes all the calls all the shots. He's the ultimate Dayan, right? Like we learned in Parsha Mishpatim. So they wanted to create something that would hone in Hashem's, not Hashem himself, but Hashem's Midah called Midas HaDin. That's not Hashem. Hashem has his ways of communicating to the world. He communicates through Chesed. He communicates through Din. What they wanted to do was hone in on one aspect of Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu shined in, called Midas HaDin, bring that down, and now we have a Moshe Rabbeinu in the form of an Egel Azav who is compensating for the loss that we had from Moshe Rabbeinu. We have now this Midas HaDin. So the Ramban says this would have been okay. They never wanted to worship this thing. But who always is a thorn in our sides, my friends? The Erev Rav. The Erev Rav are the people who cause the most trouble, right? And they, you know, sometimes you have a good idea and it's going to go well. And then there's like a couple troublemakers who ruin the thing. It started out very good. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of hooligans come in and they mess the whole thing up. It was really a nice idea. You know, like you have like these nice, you have hakafas at a shul and then you have a couple bottles of whiskey so guys can make a l'chaim. It's all fun and good and it helps. But then you have a few guys who just go in and then, you know, they're just happy to have free booze. And, you know, they end up taking over the hakafas too. They're like, why should we just stay here bored? They like come into the hakafas, right? And they cause trouble, right? So it changed. The Egel Hazav turned into a Avodah Zarah through the Erev Rav. And that's why how many people were killed? Not too many. How many people were killed in the Egel Hazav? 3,000. And the Meforshim or Medayik, it couldn't have been that we were all that bad. And Aaron, according to the Beis Medrash, the Ramban, Aaron was simply just trying to maneuver Klal Yisrael and to manage what was happening over here. And he had no intention to do anything other than serve Hashem. But the Erev Rav started worshiping the Midas Hadin of Hashem. So you might ask me, why is it so bad to worship the Midah of Din of Hashem? If I just told you that this calf was a representation of Hashem's Midas Hadin, why is that so bad? So I will tell you a secret, my friends. You're not allowed to worship one aspect of Hashem. If someone ever says, I want to worship the Midah of Chesed of Hashem, or the Midah of Din, that is Avodah Zarah. It's called Kotzeitz Benetiyus. It's limiting Hashem's presence to one thing that you need. You're not allowed to do that. The only thing we're allowed to do when we speak to Hashem is say His names. A name is the whole person. When I say Avrami, I don't mean Avrami's elbow. I don't mean Avrami's knee or Avrami's foot. I mean the whole Gansa Avrami. Right? When you call out Shakai, Kael, Elokim, Tzvakos, Yudke Vavke, you're always speaking to the whole Hashem Echad. And that's fine. Just follow your sitter. It'll never lead you astray. But if people want to become very Kabbalistic and they start praying to particular Hanhagas of Hashem, which, by the way, people think that they could dabble in Kabbalah. And like, why not, you know? And, you know, sometimes you go to the Kosel and you see these interesting people with, like, sitters that look like roadmaps of, like, you know, names of Hashem. I'm very scared of these people because a lot of them are worse off than they were before. Before, they were just an Erlich Yid calling out to Hashem with his name. Once you start messing with Kabbalah, you can end up becoming an apikorsis and apikleris or an Oved Avodah Zarah if you don't know what you're doing. But Klal Yisrael actually were serving the Midah, the Erev Rav was getting us into serving the Midos of Hashem. We don't do that. We never serve a Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just to end off, that was the Ramban's approach. To end off with the Kuzari's approach, so you have this is real Yesodas today, right? We started with the Ibn Ezra, who said that it was an embodiment of Hashem, which the Ramban says is untenable, you don't make an eagle that way, but rather they were focusing on the shore of the eagle Azav, the shore on the Kisei HaKavod. The Kuzari, who's our earliest approach, aside from Rasadigon, but the Kuzari, an early approach from 900 years ago to the ego, he's very sympathetic to Klal Yisrael, even though we did something wrong. The Kuzari is saying, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, he's saying, you don't understand that this was a world that only knew how to serve gods or Hashem, Yisbar, anybody, with physical things. It was a world where there needed to be something tangible in front of you. The world of Avodah Zarah that Klal Yisrael came from, the Goyim, they always had, not just the gods themselves were made of molten images, but even the things that go, the accessories. There's a lot of sounds and lights and things to see, to hone in on. It says that these people, Klal Yisrael, needed something tangible. They lost Moshe Rabbeinu, and now they needed something tangible. He says, just like we, when we daven in a shul, we love a beautiful Aron Kodesh, and it like focuses us. You go into a shul with a beautiful Aron. It's a physical structure, but it like just gets you like, wow, like you feel awe-inspired by what's happening over here. He says, that was Klal Yisrael at the time, and he says that Klal Yisrael had reason to believe that this was good. Because where do we find a precedent for molten images in the Torah? Give me a precedent that... What's that? The Kruvim in the Kodesh Kedashim. Talk about the most misleading message. In the Kodesh Kedashim, which is the heart of all of Klal Yisrael, what's in there? Molten images. Two Kruvim. And not just one, right? Two. Actually, two is probably better than one. If it was one, maybe people would think it's a deity. But it's two. It's a man and a woman kruv. So this was their mentality at the time. And he says, They had a deep need to follow Hashem with tangible things. And this is something very real. This is another lesson. We learned, one lesson we learned was about leaders, not making your leaders bigger, that making them invincible or making them that you can't live without them. The other one was what to do when there's a delay, right? A lot of delays in life, not to panic, not to lose sight of the fact that you might be making a mistake, and just hold on, hold tight, right? And now we're learning over here, that, and this is something that Beis Halevi highlights here, is throughout the Mishkan, you know when it kept saying, Kasher Tziva Hashem, Kasher Tziva Hashem. You do everything that you're commanded to do. There's a lot of taiva in religiosity to add in your own funky things. It makes me extremely nervous, certain things that people do. Like they want, there was a discussion about that some people play music during Hallel. They take out their guitars and they and their violins and all this. It's very, very exciting. But at the end of the day, a person has to ask if it's kasher tziva Hashem. Always tangible Judaism will be more exciting. That's why the women want to put on tefillin, the woman at the wall, because it's cool to have a box on your head. Like, you know, like what, taking care of kids is not tangible enough. You have boxes, you know, on your head and your arm. That's like mamash azach. Put on tzitzis. They're bothered that their Judaism is not tangible enough. However, if it's not kasher tziva Hashem, if Hashem doesn't want it, it won't get you to where you want to be in life. It'll only bring you down. And their problem was not their intent. Their intent was just to make Hashem's presence more tangible. They weren't trying to make the Egel Azav mamish into an Avodah Zarah. Again, he also holds that the Erev Rav got in on the thing, right? And what's the proof? It says in Chazal that your nation, Moshe Rabbeinu, is messing up. Chazal say, why does it say your nation? Who was Megayer the Erev Rav? Moshe had an idea to bring Gerim into Klal Yisrael. He's the one who brought Erev Rav in. And the Medrash says, Hashem says, you see what you did? He says, my kids are doing fine. My nation's fine. You came up with a chap to be Megayer, all these people. Now look at the mess that was created through your nation. And that did turn into literal Avodah Zarah. However, Avodah Zarah develops from whenever a person leaves Kasher Tziva Hashem. Once you try to do something that's meaningful, I am vehemently opposed to the idea of playing instruments in Hallel. I hold that such a thing is shayach to mamish the Cheda Egel, according to these Mefarshim, and that it's not what it is right today, it's what it turns into. It's what it turns into. Eventually, people will forget the Hallel and they'll worship the music. You think that's a little crazy, but you know what? This is what we learn from these parshiyos. We learn the Chachmas HaTorah, how one thing can lead to another. But Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael, now there's such a tikkun that we're trying so hard. We follow the Mishnah Brura, and we speak to Rav Wiener about everything. And if a person, somebody told me, Rav Noach Orlowick, a very big mashgiach, when I took this job, he said to me, I asked him, what do you need to know to be a mashgiach? It's very kedai if you ever become a mashgiach, speak to other mashgiach, or in any field, right? Go to over the big ones and say, what would you tell me? You know, here we have like 30 years of experience, what would you tell me? One major thing he told me, and I use this to this day, and it annoys Bachram a lot, they come over to me and ask me a shayla, and he says, they need to know that you are not a posek, that you're a mashgiach. So, part of my job, he told me, is to send people to Rabbi Wiener for the shaylas that they ask me so that they know the difference in the roles in Klal Yisrael. It's a beautiful thing. It's a very big chinuch. Bachram seemed to think, come on, you're a rabbi, whatever. And no, there's halacha. It's very nice to be a mashgiach, and that there's all sorts of beautiful ideas in the Torah that we bring out. However, halacha's an expertise. Halacha's precision. And if you don't have that, you don't have that training, so then you have no business just giving this out. And that's why we have poskim in Klal Yisrael.